A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there was a Star Wars episode of Vox Pop that I was forced to do. Good afternoon, and may the 4th be with you. The time is 2 o'clock. It's Vox Pop. It's a special Star Wars episode. I'm Ray Graff. Today we discuss this ever-popular universe of very lucrative things with our favorite geek, Rick Marshall. Where is the franchise headed? Well, to the bank. But what movies are next? Which ones are your favorites? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. Hell, I've got an hour to kill. 800-348-2551. You can also email your Star Wars questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Buy the premise, buy the gag. May the 4th be with you after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. In 2020, the Star Wars franchise's value was estimated at about $70 billion. It's currently the fifth highest grossing media franchise of all time. It has one of the largest fan bases in history. And today we're going to indulge in some Star Wars talk. Here to do that is our friend, expert Rick Marshall. Rick is an award-winning journalist with more than two decades of experience covering arts and entertainment and emerging technology. His work has been featured on MTV News, Digital Trends, Movies.com, IFC, and other outlets. He's a voracious consumer of movies, TV, video games, and other entertainment. One of his earliest movie memories, and we'll talk about it in a moment, is watching The Empire Strikes Back in a crowded theater the week it premiered in our region. Today, he's ready to relive those moments with you and discuss Star Wars. The number to call is 800-348-2551. If you'd like to do that, 800-348-2551 is the number. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Rick Marshall, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. May the 4th be with you, Ray. Oh,
if I hear that one more time, I'm going to tear this building to the ground. But welcome all the same, my friend. And I know you're a big fan. You're one of your first, before we get into the Star Wars stuff, what's going on with you? You always got some gadgets and some games. If you follow Rick on social media, you know he's always got something new that comes in the mail. What's new?
Well, it's been all Star Wars all the time for like the past, I don't know, 48 hours or so. It's you know, I'd hate to act like it was a problem, like this was a negative, because to be quite honest, I'm really fortunate. But I've definitely got Star Wars on the brain constantly right now. I just got a big package, actually, a very nice surprise from Hasbro. They had sent me a whole bunch of Star Wars toys that they have coming out just for no reason, really. It just shows up, and that's sort of the gig I'm in. And my kids don't quite understand why this happens or what's going on, but they know that every now and then daddy gets a big box of toys in the mail. And it's weird because they're going to think this is normal, normal career.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what's been going on. All Star Wars all the time.
You know, it does tend to keep the child-raising overhead down when they send you boxes of stuff to check out. So good for you, man. We had mentioned in the intro to this that one of your first movie memories is watching The Empire Strikes Back, and that was 1980, right?
Yeah, right around 1980. I don't remember exactly which theater it was, but I do remember very vividly the opening Hoth scene with the AT-ATs and the Arctic sort of tundra. And then I do remember hiding under the chair that my mom was sitting in for a significant chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
As I think a lot of kids did, you know, and because I was probably too young for Empire Strikes Back, to be quite honest. At least I probably wouldn't have my kids see it at that age, but it was a different time. It was the 80s. And so, yeah, I don't know exactly which theater it was, but I remember certain scenes and just that image of the AT-ATs coming over the horizon in Hoth was really one of my earliest movie memories, and really had me fall in love with movies and the theater and science fiction at such an early age.
And I think that is the absolute best of all of them, even with the effects that are now sort of primitive by comparison. They were spectacular. And that was the last Star Wars movie I saw until I took my kids to The Force Awakens in 2015. But I remember I was 12, maybe, seeing the opening of the first Star Wars. That was, what, 77, right?
Yeah, 77. They were every 3 years, 77, 80, and 83.
So when that opened, it was a real phenomenon. And I remember tickets, I think, were hard to come by. And I think our folks took us to the theater in Chatham. What's that, the Crandall? What is that theater? The little movie theater. It's still there.
And I think you're right.
And it was incredible. The house was packed. It was a summer day, a summer night. And I'll tell you, that was a communal experience. And that is one of the things you miss when you're watching movies at home, even if you have a 65-inch TV on the wall or whatever. It's that communal spirit. And yeah, that movie was a groundbreaking one. We're talking Star Wars today with Rick Marshall, who is, I'll tell you, every time you turn around, he's on one of these networks. I think I saw you on, what, CNN or MSNBC one day not too long ago?
Yeah, I've been all over the place talking on one thing or another. You know, it's funny. Early on when I started doing these sort of appearances on things to talk about, you know, what movies and TV and games are coming out, one of the producers who was a friend of mine had sort of asked me, you know, how do you want to be introduced? What should we say to introduce you? And I jokingly sort of ran through all the different things that I write, the different outlets I write for, what I do. And then I was like, yeah, you know, basically like a professional geek. And then next thing I know, I'm being introduced on this TV show. And they're like, we have Rick Marshall, professional geek.
Yeah, well, you know, if the shoe fits, if the conical hat fits, wear it. Now, before we go to break, and then we'll get to some calls and some emails, try to parse this for me. Now, I mentioned to you that I saw the first two films in the theater when I was a kid, took my kids to the first, not the first reboot, but sort of the... you know, they did those digital ones that I never saw in the mid-2000s. And then the 2015,
the
Force Awakens.
Special editions.
Right. It was a big deal. Take me through this fictional universe and try to put things in order. I know that the first one that came out is not the first one in this sort of sequence.
Well, they thankfully have episodes. And the first one that came out in 1977 is episode 4.
But it didn't have that in the beginning, did it? This is revisionist history.
It was always considered episode 4. It sort of came out later on. They decided to make this episode 4. And George Lucas always felt that, you know, according to reports, he always felt that this could be the middle point in a story. He had some ideas for prequels. He had this grand vision for it. And it started with episode 4. And I think that was such a bold move to sort of retroactively make it episode 4 and to do that. Because, you know, as the movie starts out, there is this intimation that there is a lot that happened before this. And to then go back and do it was groundbreaking. But, yeah, they have all the episodes. And then you have, you know, you have episode 4, 5, 6. And then we did episode 1, 2, 3. And then we, you know, did 7, 8, 9. And those 9 films are what are considered the Skywalker saga. You know, recently Disney sort of just labeled that. That is the Skywalker saga, those 9 films. And then you have a couple of spinoffs. You have Rogue One, which occurs right before the events of Star Wars, the 1977 Star Wars, A New Hope. And then you also, you know, you also have Solo, which also occurs prior to that film and gives you a look at Han Solo's early years. And, you know, and then we're going to have some movies coming out soon that are set in different time periods throughout that Star Wars saga, as well as TV shows that are coming out that are happening all over the place in them. But yeah, it definitely takes some timeline management and some understanding of the timeline, because I get from a lot of people, where is this TV show set? When is this supposed to be happening? And I find myself explaining that a lot to people, like, okay, it's before this thing and after this thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go to Wikipedia, it's 15 pages to figure this out. And they have the High Republic, the Fall of the Jedi, the New Republic, the Age of Resistance. There's a lot of a parsing we have to do here with Rick Marshall. It's Star Wars today here on the 4th of May, you know, May the 4th, if you haven't heard that one. And we'll take a quick break. We'll get to your calls and your emails, 800-348-2551. Oh, there's the music. Oh, make it end. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
join me or you'll have to host a stupid talk show on the radio.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's 800-348-2551. Yeah, it's Star Wars today, and we welcome back our buddy Rick Marshall, who has been on these airwaves before. And you know, I kid about Star Wars, but I was enthralled by the first couple and then sort of grew out of it for a while. But the Force Awakens was, to me, it looked and felt like a Star Wars movie.
Oh, yes. I mean, The Force Awakens was really going back and taking a lot of what worked about the first Star Wars movie and recapturing sort of that magic. And many people criticized it for that, to be honest. Like, many people said that it was retreading, you know, where the first one went. But for me, I felt that that was kind of necessary because it was sort of righting the ship after, you know, what quite a few people consider a very weak set of, you know, prequel films. This sort of gets things back on track, reminds you what you love about the franchise, and kind of gets the ball rolling again. And I love that about The Force Awakens. I mean, nothing is better than seeing, you know, Han Solo and Chewbacca just saying, Chewie, I'm home, when they get on the Millennium Falcon. That's just bang. There's that dose of nostalgia.
It was a big moment for sure. And a few emails here, and then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551. Tell you what, this one person's been waiting a long time. So let's go right to Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering, Mr. Gordon, could they make those Star Wars ships into commercial planes if they wanted to?
Could they make the Star Wars ships into commercial planes if they want to, Rick?
Oof, wow. I am not an aeronautical science engineer, so I'm not sure. But I do know that a lot of the ones that they designed in for Rogue One and a few of the other earlier, those sort of early Star Wars eras were based on actual military transports, especially, you know, when they're talking about that era of like the clone troopers and the Clone Wars, that sort of precedes Star Wars that we know, the 1977 Star Wars. I've talked to the Lucasfilm designer, the conceptual designer before, and he used, the team used actual sort of military aircraft, military vehicles as sort of the starting point for a lot of the vehicles that we now know. And for instance, things like Millennium Falcon itself was designed as a freighter. It was meant to be a freight ship that had been redesigned for Han Solo to use to smuggle things. So they start off with these sort of basic ideas of what a freighter would look like or what a military vehicle would look like, and then just gave it a sort of Star Wars, you know, Star Wars spin in a lot of cases.
Yeah, Chris. Okay.
Yeah. Do you think they could use them today or no?
Use what today?
I think we're still far ways off on that one.
Yeah, hey, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Star Wars today on Vox Pop. Rick Marshall joins us. And, you know, it's funny. You think about those effects in 1977. And you mentioned George Lucas sort of saying, okay, well, we're going to base this on a military transport or whatever. It must have been a hell of a lot of work. There was not digital technology like we know it today. How long did it take to actually make that first one?
Well, it took quite a while to make, and one of the amazing things about it is this was groundbreaking. The first Star Wars was groundbreaking for miniatures, particularly. The way that George Lucas used miniatures in this film and used sort of filmed it to do special effects using these miniatures and make the miniatures look bigger was never really before used. And he created, you know, in his entire visual effects studio based on this film. And I do a lot of reporting on visual effects technology in Hollywood over the years. And I always find that interesting that Star Wars, you know, was the first film to actually win what became, you know, what we now know as the best visual effects category. There had always been visual effects related honors. There had been some categories that included visual effects. But the first time the Academy actually created an award specifically for best visual effects, Star Wars won it. And it's also the reason why Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which many argue is also a very Oscar-worthy film, didn't win it because the only thing it had going against it was Star Wars, and it was never going to beat Star Wars. So you had, you know, Spielberg and Lucas going head-to-head that year, and Star Wars just blew everything out of the water with its innovative use of visual effects.
And you mentioned the miniatures. Of course, they were using miniatures in Godzilla films in the 60s. And, you know, probably in the 50s, there were films that used them as well. But none like that. And the effect when you were in a big movie theater and that screen was huge was really amazing. And I think having seen little bits of those three that were released, what were they, the prequel? And I think a couple of my kids have a couple of them, you know, they're too perfect. And I think that's one of the reasons I really don't like them.
You're not alone. George Lucas really wanted to invest in his time in doing things with the green screens and using this new technology at that time to create a lot of scenes. But when we look at them now, I just watched them not too long ago, within the last couple of years, with my kids here. And my wife and I were both sort of looking at each other partway through it. Like, our kids loved the way they looked.
Yeah.
But we were kind of looking at each other and going, wow, these just don't look really that great, because it is at that point such a primitive version of the same sort of technology we're using now. And it might have been, you know, great at the time, and I remember being wowed by some of it when I went to see those prequel movies in the theater. But yeah, it hasn't aged well, some of those effects. You can really see where the green screen is. You can really see when they're acting against sort of a matte painting in the background, where the miniatures, you know, in the original trilogy had a real sense of texture and this physical sense, like when there's that slow pan over the Star Destroyers to open up the first Star Wars. I mean, you can't really beat that. There's that physical texture to them that I think, you know, we're starting to sort of get back to now in movies. And I really like that. That's appreciated now.
We're joined today by Rick Marshall. We talk Star Wars here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is our number if you want to call in. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And a few emails here. This one's from Sally in Albany. Sally writes, there are so many elements of the franchise, movies, TV, books, comics, etc. In what order? Oh, God, that's a tough question. In what order should one consume all of it to get the most out of the franchise? Is that even possible, Rick Marshall?
Well, I think you'll be really hard-pressed to consume everything. But fortunately, when Disney bought Lucasfilm in 2012, they bought the entire, you know, franchise and such, and they effectively kind of rebooted a lot of the sort of extraneous, the tie-in stuff that had been out there. This, you know, earned them a lot of hatred from a lot of longtime fans who were really invested in the, you know, mountains and mountains of expanded universe novels and things like that existed. They effectively rebooted it where they said, okay, from this point on, only the things that we are putting out are in canon, are in the actual Star Wars timeline. And that's actually manageable. I've gone through and read some of the novels now and the comics and things like that. And it's actually manageable to start from that point. You just kind of have to figure out where that point is. And you can do that, you know, just looking on the Star Wars site and looking for, you know, some of the official information. They'll give you timelines there. And there's also just a lot of question about what order to even watch the movies in. People have very different perspectives on how to watch even just the movies. If you want to take in those, there's the episode, you know, the order that they were released in theaters, there's the episode order, and then there's something, another order entirely that takes into sort of thematic accounts, takes into account thematic elements of them, where it sort of feels like one long saga because you're watching them sort of out of order and saving certain parts of the story till later in your movie marathon. So there's a lot of disagreement there, and no one's going to tell you that anything is universal.
Yeah, you make a point about how the storylines sort of arc together and they have been re-pieced together. And it reminds me to some extent of the Godfather saga in that it was pieced all together with some added bits. And was there not a little controversy at one time when they released DVDs of the original three films? Did they not add or change some of those films?
Yeah, they originally released these films when they finally did them on DVD. They only released them in the special edition format, which changed some things that people really weren't too happy about. For instance, the one of the big ones is, you know, when they released the special editions that George Lucas had gone back and sort of edited a bit more and add some different effects and things like that. They released those DVDs, and For instance, Han Solo no longer shoots first in Star Wars.
Oh, interesting.
And there's a very iconic scene where he's facing off, when you first meet Han Solo, he's facing off with this this bounty hunter named Greedo, an alien, and in it they're having a conversation, and Han Solo shoots him before Greedo has a chance to shoot him. But in the sort of re-edited version, Greedo shoots first and Han shoots back. And there are little changes like that that they make. They didn't think that Han should, you know, be a person who shoots first, but a lot of people sort of like that about the character. And unfortunately, those are the only versions of the films that you could get for a very, very long time, for decades. But now we're starting to see some of the original versions start making their way out in one form or another, sometimes official, sometimes not, but they are out there.
I mean, at the end of one of the films, maybe I'm wrong, I mean, it's been so long, but at the end of one of the films, isn't Skywalker standing there with Darth Vader, and they completely changed the ending, and didn't they put in, Liam Neeson or somebody who was in one of the middle movies?
Yeah.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, they put in Hayden Christensen and Liam Neeson, sort of their force ghosts at the end of Return of the Jedi there. They sort of started adding the characters from the prequel series into Return of the Jedi, which also a lot of people were kind of, that took them out of sort of the moment sometimes. But the thing to remember too is, honestly, when you have these new movies and a new audience is seeing them, like my kids, for instance, it's not something that they notice, and they kind of love it because it brings the whole thing together for them. Otherwise, they'd be asking who this strange actor was who's supposed to be Anakin Skywalker in the background, or who this is. It really brings the movie together for people who, you know, in generations who grew up maybe on these prequels and, you know, who don't have that sort of connection to the original way things were with some. I've had to learn how to juggle that and balance that out with my own sort of, oh man, I wish they didn't do that tendencies.
So you're okay with it ultimately?
Certain things I'm okay with, certain things I'm not. I don't like when they change entire story elements, like the Han shoots first sort of thing. I think that's sort of part of the character and part of that character's background. And there's a few other elements that they've changed that I feel like have altered the complete picture of a character that I don't think are the best things to do. But, you know, who am I to say? I'm not George Lucas. So, you know what? I got to go with what he decided to do. And you know, give him the benefit of the doubt.
All right. Well, good. You're a forgiving man, but I am not. Did Picasso take down any of his paintings? You know, I got to touch this one up. I'm going to pull it down off the museum wall, and I'm going to just do a couple of extra strokes here. To me, I mean, I know Coppola's doing it with Godfather 3 right now. I guess you're allowed to, but to me, it cheapens the original art. Let's go to the phones and Jeffy in Pittsfield. Jeffy, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I was gonna talk about the Han and Greedo thing, but you answered my question.
Oh my gosh! Well, ask it anyway. We got 30 minutes to go.
I was gonna say, who shot first, Han or Greedo?
Rick.
But that's always been the argument.
Always gonna be an Han shot first guy.
I mean, Han. That's sort of
exactly.
That's his attitude, right?
Yeah, he's a guy who just sort of, you know, does that. I think that's part of that character. He thinks a few steps ahead of everybody.
True enough.
Yeah, it makes him the cowboy and the whole space western thing. It goes with the whole package.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
Hey, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Larry in New Paltz. Hello there, Larry. You're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I was expressing the thought that one of the things that made Star Wars possible was American Graffiti.
Why?
It was George Lucas's big hit before Star Wars, and I think it gave him the credibility with the studios to be able to do something. And it also, I guess, provided some funds for Star Wars. That's my guess.
Interesting.
If I'm wrong, I'd like to know.
Rick, what do you think?
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, Star Wars was such a huge gamble for George Lucas that a lot of things that sort of enabled it to become the franchise that it is right now, and the massive sort of saga that it is right now, happened because he was able to get just enough leeway to make the movie, you know, just enough sort of credit to make the movie, but they weren't sure of it enough to really like take ownership of it, the studios and things like that. So, I mean, he had some amazing deals that have never been repeated ever in Hollywood history. Like, for instance, the toy deals connected with Star Wars was one of the craziest toy deals ever in history for any major franchise, and was arguably one of the most successful elements of Star Wars. It was a $1 billion sort of deal that he made that he got most of, because no one knew what to do with it. They basically, toy companies had to just go on his word that it was going to be popular. He just gave them a couple of drawings and said, yeah, whatever toy company wants to make this, let's go with that. And he was able to get all the rights and made all the money off of it. Because of that, as the caller here said, you know, they knew he was a filmmaker, but they weren't quite sure enough about him making a space opera movie to sort of take the usual Hollywood control of it.
Larry, thanks a lot for the call. Would you consider this to be a space opera or, as one of our other callers mentioned, a space western?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, it's an opera in that it, you know, sort of it goes over this really long period and follows some of the operatic sort of pacing.
Yeah.
But, you know, at its heart, it's a western. I mean, George Lucas cribbed a lot from some great Kurosawa films to make this movie. And as a lot of filmmakers do, they crib from Kurosawa and a lot of other different influences over time. And, you know, it became its own thing. I think it's a little bit of both. It's a space western. It's a space opera. It's a space adventure. And I think that's really the best way to describe it. It's this wonderful space adventure.
Rick Marshall joins us, and I know that you will not answer this in the affirmative, but I'll ask you anyway. There are those critics who say, you know, this was a groundbreaking film in 1977, and combined as a franchise with the others, this has destroyed filmmaking.
I would definitely disagree with that, yes. I think that, you know, it's anything that's groundbreaking and changes the game in filmmaking, you know, is a good thing, because it forces us to think outside the box. And the things that were first used in Star Wars became the norm in movies that followed, both, you know, in sci-fi and in other genres. We might not have had some of the great films to follow Star Wars if Star Wars didn't come around. And so many filmmakers have been influenced by it. We wouldn't have some of the best sci-fi and fantasy films that have come out in the last 10 years if those filmmakers didn't go see Star Wars when they were little. And I love that that's the influence that it has.
You make a great point. Rick Marshall is our guest today. It's Star Wars Today on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Uh-oh. Sounds like Shartok's in the house. We'll take a break. Turns out Shartok's not in the house, so everything's fine. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop Today. Yeah, Rick Marshall is here. We talk Star Wars every 5 or 6 years, and that's enough. Hey, Rick, this email came in from Laura, and we were talking about the first time we saw this film, or any of the Star Wars films, and Laura shares a great memory. She writes, I was 6 hours north of Oslo, Norway, and the residents told us that part of Star Wars 3 was filmed there. We were above the tree line, and it did sort of look like we were on the moon. The snow was white, as was the sky. It was hard to tell where one started and one ended. It was very cool. Did they shoot some of that in Norway?
I'm not sure offhand. To be honest, I'm not sure. That wouldn't surprise me. I know a significant chunk of it was filmed in Tunisia, in the first one. You can actually visit the leftover sort of sets in Tunisia from Star Wars, which is super, super cool. I have a relative who was stationed out there in the Foreign Service, and she sent some photos of it and took the trip out to see all of the sort of leftover Tatooine sets that were there. Oh, and cool. It's kind of amazing. Anywhere, much like Lord of the Rings and other big sagas like that, anywhere that this has been filmed then becomes a destination. And I think that's just one of the sort of testaments to its amazing global sort of staying power.
Let's see. Tom writes this. I first saw Star Wars in 1977 in Denver in a full-size theater with a wraparound type screen and Dolby sound, and it was sold out except for the very front row. After the opening scene with the ships flying over, there was no other way to get the experience. But I did see the Avatar movie in 3D also in the front row again, and it was fantastic. Do you think Star Wars will ever be released in 3D, or has it already?
I don't know if they'll ever release it in a 3D format because it would require so much of the sort of, re-editing and sort of making it work in that 3D format. And unfortunately, movies that weren't initially filmed in 3D tend to not look that great when they sort of revise them and sort of cut them into sort of a 3D version. Avatar was filmed in 3D. It used all 3D cameras. It was one of the best 3D films I think ever made.
Yeah.
But in the past we've seen them and it just doesn't quite work out as well when something is converted to 3D. So to be honest, I hope they don't do that. I'm not saying they won't, but I hope they don't, because you tend to lose a little bit in there, and it always looks a bit wonky when you sort of revise something into 3D.
Yeah, I think you make a point. We're joined today by Rick Marshall. This email from Gertrude in Castleton on Hudson. What's your opinion of the movie Solo? I love it, but diehard fans seem to hate it. Why?
I think Solo was a lot of fun. It does get a lot of flack from people, but I think that is probably one of my not one of my favorites of the entire franchise, but I do like it a bit. I think it was one of the most pure fun adventure. It wasn't dark. It didn't take the franchise into very many new places, but it was just fun to watch. It wasn't heavy. It wasn't, weighty. It wasn't dripping with certain, nostalgic elements that seemed a bit too, on the nose, like hammered, hitting you overhead with some of them. It just felt like a fun little adventure. I put it sort of right, maybe in the middle of sort of the sequel trilogy films in terms of my rankings. And unfortunately, my rankings, I've put them out before, and I get a lot of flack for where I rank certain films in it. So my opinion is probably not to the one to go on for the majority of Star Wars fans, judging by the feedback I've gotten.
Interesting. So basically, you're sort of, that film was an outlier. You're an outlier with the true Star Wars intelligentsia. We're joined today by Rick Marshall, who is an award-winning journalist all the same, with more than two decades of experience covering arts and entertainment and emerging technology. You've seen him on MTV, If You Watch That, Digital Trends, Movies.com, IFC. This email from Mark, and it sort of goes along those lines. Why is it that whenever sci-fi fans gather together, there always seems to be a rivalry that breaks out between fans of Star Wars and fans of Star Trek? What's the deal with that? Why do these two groups of fans not get along? And that's from Mark.
Well, I sort of look at it the same way. Why is it that when, there's a football game being played, two people, two groups of people got to all be, arguing with each other and fighting with each other about it? It's just a game of football. But then you think about, you like teams. Everybody's got their favorite team. So if you're on a team original trilogy and nothing else, then, you're going to not be happy with the people who are, team. I started watching Star Wars with the prequels, or I got back into Star Wars with the sequel trilogy, or, things like that. Or I like the expanded universe stuff and not the, more recent post-acquisition Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
We all have that sort of tribalistic mentality when it comes to the things that we love, whether it's sports, whether it's, sci-fi, whether it's music. We have those things, and arguing with each other is kind of part of the fun. I love sort of putting out my rankings sometimes of the Star Wars movies and then just going back and forth with people about why I liked one movie more than another one. And, as long as you keep things civil, I learn a lot from it, and I get a lot of enjoyment from that discussion.
So you're able to monetize that too. So, good for you. Rick Marshall is our guest today. And by the way, just as an aside, before we go to the next call, James T. Kirk would have mopped the floor with Vader and with Luke Skywalker and with Han Solo. It would have been over in 20 minutes. James T. Kirk. Let's go to Tara in Lake Katrine. Tara, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Okay. So I have an Ewok question, a Wookiee question, really. Okay, so I recall a Christmas special, and I think Wilford Brimley was in it, and there was a little alien named Teek.
Yes!
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes!
Terrible.
That was the
I love it.
That was the illustrated Star Wars holiday special that George Lucas himself even hates to. Yep. He hates to even acknowledge that it exists. He took all the copies of it out of print.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I have one.
You know what?
You have one? Oh, good for you. That's great. Hold on to that thing.
You are one of the very few who have that. That is precious. I don't even know many people who own that. But you know what?
No one really is very familiar with it or recalls it.
It was dreadful.
It's very important.
Special. It was awful. It was terrible, but it was cute, and I love that kind of stuff. So I have a secondary question here. That was just a bread up.
The introduction of Boba Fett. That was the first appearance of Boba Fett. So everyone right now loves Boba Fett and who adores the Mandalorian and all of that sort of stuff. They owe it to that Star Wars Christmas special back in the day for bringing their favorite character to the screen.
Wow. Tara, you got a second question.
Well, I'll make copies. I'll have to set up a side business. do you know, is there anything like that with Wookiees involved? Was there any kind of a Wookiee special?
No. The Disney Plus.
I think I might be confusing that in my head with the... There was also a special around the same time where it was a one-eyed purple people eater, and I might be confusing for Ewoks being in that, just misplacing memory. Do you remember that big
Disney Plus just released a holiday special, a Lego Star Wars holiday special that actually sort of pays a little bit of homage to that original Christmas special and also is set all around that Life Day the Life Day holiday that the original Christmas special was based on Kashyyyk, the Wookiee's homeworld. They have this Life Day holiday that they made this special about way back in the day, and now they sort of revisit it in this holiday special that just came out on Disney Plus streaming service that has all of these characters from the sequels. It has Rey and Finn and all of them and the original trilogy people in it, all sort of revisiting this holiday that was first introduced in that Christmas special.
Yeah.
Well, this sounds exciting. I'm going to look into it. Thank you very much for taking the time out to talk to me about the ill-fated Christmas special that everyone needs to see.
Tara, you win the Honorary Geek Award for the program. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. And let's go over to Cooperstown and someone who bills himself as James Dean. Hello, Cooperstown. You're on.
Yes, thank you. I'm enjoying your program, and I wanted to pass along my thoughts at the time I saw the film, which was very many years ago. I saw Star Wars as a story of not only personal transformation, but a story of human beings trying to find their place in the universe. And each of the characters was a part of the conscious or unconscious, playing their part in trying to guide the mission, so to speak, for human beings to find their way home. It was very fascinating, and that's how I have to say it.
Rick, what do you think about that? That's an interesting take.
Yeah, I think one of the beautiful things about Star Wars is that you can interpret it in a lot of ways and what the themes were. I had a conversation with someone not too long ago about the different ways people view Star Wars. Some view it as Luke's story. Some view it as, other characters' story in it. Some view it, in the big picture of the sort of cyclical way that history works with wars and empires and things like that. This is one chapter in it. And others sort of looked at it as this very personal story of, like this caller said, of a farm boy finding his destiny, finding what, what role he's supposed to play in this much bigger story. You can go as small as you want with Star Wars, or you can go as historic and expansive as you want with it. And I think that's one of the beauties of this entire saga.
James Dean, thank you very much. Drive carefully. Our number is 800-348-2551. This email from Patrick in North Adams. Patrick writes, after the groundbreaking special effects of A New Hope, how could the graphics in Terminator and even Terminator 2 be so terrible? The future scenes of flying ships in and even the T-101s in T-1 and T-2 are horrible. Did Cameron simply not have the budget? And that's from Patrick in North Adams. I have no idea what I just read, but maybe you do, Rick Marshall.
I would honestly disagree about the assessment of Terminator and T2. I think that both films were actually pretty groundbreaking in their visual effects technology as well. T2 specifically had some of the most innovative use of that sort of liquid metal sort of effect that we had seen up to that point, that then became the basis for a lot of visual effects sequences down the road. The stuff that was used in the Terminator movies was heavily influential in some of the films that followed it. But it was also the 80s. And I feel like the 80s was a really huge period for big leaps in visual effects technology. At the time, we really made this leap from practical to digital during that period. Yeah. And movies like Star Wars and Terminator and a few other sci-fi films that came out during that time were not only the testing ground, but also sort of the proving ground for the ability to sort of make that transition.
Interesting. This email, I'll tell you what. Okay, it's no secret. I'm not talking out of school here that our news director, Ian Pickus, is a Star Wars fanatic. And frankly, there are a lot of them around the station, and that's why I'm the hippest person in the station. And Ian writes, why was number 9 so bad? I don't know which one was number 9?
Spoken as a huge Star Wars fanatic. Yes. You know what? I did not hate 9, but it wasn't my favorite of the bunch. It was my least favorite of the 3 sequel films. But I didn't think it was terrible. So, you know, why was it so bad? It's a very sort of loaded question. Yeah. You know, I liked it. I found certain parts to be very rewarding, certain parts to be laughable, but you know, it sort of wrapped things up in a very particular way that some had, like myself, had sort of seen coming for a few movies prior.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was fun to watch. I felt at the end final, and I think that it was a fitting conclusion to the Skywalker saga that had been going on now for 9 years and many decades, and sort of, you know, cleanse the palate so that we can say, hey, let's see what's next now.
Okay, so, all right, what is next now? We'll go back to the phones in a moment, but briefly, I know there are several films that are either in progress or will soon be in progress. What happens next, and then we'll jump back to the phones?
Well, the future of Star Wars is mostly on the TV side at the moment. There are about 6 or 7 TV shows that have all been announced, all on Disney Plus. They're coming out over the course of, you know, this year leading into, I think they're dated all the way out until 2023.
Yeah.
And beyond, exploring different aspects of the Star Wars, you know, Star Wars saga, some known, some unknown. We've got, you know, a whole thing about Boba Fett. We've got a whole thing about one of the characters from Rogue One. We've got Obi-Wan Kenobi is getting his own series with Ewan McGregor reprising the role. That one's going to show, you know, what he was up to while Luke Skywalker was growing up and he was exiled on Tatooine. And then there's a bunch of other ones that are coming up. Lando Calrissian has his own series coming up.
Tremendous.
The only movie announced so far that's coming up is Rogue Squadron. That one's supposed to be coming out in 2023. And that one will, you know, be directed by Patty Jenkins, who did Wonder Woman. She's absolutely phenomenal. And we don't know too much about it beyond that, but that's the only movie that's been sort of officially given a release date, while a lot of the TV shows are all sort of on the books right now.
Okay, so we'll have to pay for an app to watch the next Star Wars segments. Let's go to Ed in Tilson. Ed, you're on.
Hey there, how are you?
Good.
I actually have been to a site of one of the Star Wars filmings. 2005, I went to Tikal in Guatemala, which is the pyramids seen in the original Star Wars film from 77, where, you know, planet Yavin, where the rebels were hiding out before they attacked the Death Star.
Hmm.
So you could climb the pyramids and you could actually see the scene. You could I could see, you know, yeah, this is exactly the view of, you know, the Millennium Falcon coming in.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. I would love to see that. That's such a very iconic location.
Very neat. Hey, Ed, thank you for that. Appreciate you checking in. Somebody wrote in, I guess Susanna wrote in, there was a 3D Star Wars in 2012. I took my son and a friend to it in Seattle. You could barely tell it was 3D. I fell asleep. And that is from Susanna. So there's one that eluded you, Rick Marshall.
Oh, yeah. I was not aware of them releasing it in anything in 2012, but, you know, have to look into that, I guess.
This one is from Daniel. Daniel says, when Disney bought Lucasfilms, they banned any future merchandise of the notorious Slave Leia outfit. Any speculation on the collectible market for existing merchandise? I bet you do.
You know, well, you know, with that one, Disney did sort of like ban a whole lot of things that you're not going to see anymore. But that even predated Disney with sort of that we're not going to have any more of this, and the any of them that are in existence, you know, are worth a lot.
Yeah.
For instance, Return of the Jedi was originally named Revenge of the Jedi. And there was a lot of marketing material that was put out with Revenge of the Jedi on it. And
yeah.
At a very late stage, they renamed it Return of the Jedi because they decided that Lucas had decided that Revenge wasn't really a, you know, a Jedi thing. And so they wanted to make it Return. But there is tons of stuff out there that is very valuable now that has Revenge of the Jedi, you know, Star Wars Episode 6, Revenge of the Jedi, out there. So any of that stuff is really, really valuable once they discontinue it.
You know, do you think that with digital technology, they could maybe have Jabba the Hutt lose a few pounds for one of them DVDs?
Well, he did look a bit slimmed down in when they reissued, I think it was Star Wars or one of the other ones there, and they sort of digitally inserted him into it, and it looked like a very small version of him.
Star Wars Episode 10, Nutrisystem. All right, hey, listen, Rick, we're done here, man. Thank you for being here, and I'll say it one last time, and this will be the last time in my life. May the 4th be with you, sir.
I'm upset that I'm going to have to wait many more years before I have this conversation with you again, judging by the sound of things. May the 4th be with you, Ray. It's always good to talk to you.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, Red Hook. By appointment only for private one customer in the salon at a time reservations with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette, StudioKTM.com. East Branch Studios, now featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting a socially distanced Lupin Fest with activities throughout the preserve and online with artists, programs, music, games, and crafts, May 15th through June 5th, albanylupinfest.org, and Veterinary Hospital of Laurel and Brown, Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, providing comprehensive care for dogs and cats for over 25 years. New clients welcome, drlaurelandbrown.com. Once again, thanks to the great Rick Marshall for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy. The Force is with him. And Rob Ciccone answered the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy. I'm going to need this now. Matthew Goodemode will be back. We'll do some physical therapy. We'll do some squat thrusts, some push-ups, some leg lifts. That's tomorrow at 2. Stand by for the book show.